This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 1 Overall Process Support and Outreach Issue Call held on Tuesday, the 20th September 2016. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room only. So if you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to you. Sarah, please begin.
Great, thank you. This is Sarah Bakke for the record. Can everyone hear me okay? Okay, I guess so. So I'll be leading the call today. Krista Taylor, who is my co-chair, likely will not be joining us, and so I will be going solo on this with hopefully Aubrey and Jeff to make sure I don't go too much off the rails. So if you have any questions or comments, please raise your hand. It doesn't look like there's that many of us today. So I will try to catch everyone's comments in the chat as well as see your hand when it goes up. Anyway, so today's agenda, we're going to be going through, I guess you could put it on page 2 of the PowerPoint. We'll be going through our welcome, our statements of use, our statements of interest, apologies. Take a look at our work plan schedule one more time and the changes that I made to prioritization. Also go back to discussions on the accreditation, and if we have time, we'll start touching on the applicant support as well and then any other business. Okay, next slide, please. Let's see, before I get started, does anyone have anything they need to say, wish to raise? Nope. Okay, great. So I went through and looked at the schedule of topics again, and Krista had assigned A, B, C categorization for these groupings that we had put together. And then I looked at our current schedule and sort of did a rough guess at what I thought might work for this working group based off of how often we're meeting, wanting to allow at least 2 meetings for the topics. Some of them will be ongoing, like the accreditation program and the applicant support. Also took into consideration, you know, time and travel for Hyderabad, as well as the Christmas holidays. And so I sort of did this as a guide, perhaps, but I'm more than welcome for input. If someone thinks I'm being too aggressive or not enough, please let us know. We're happy to change it, but I was just trying to give a little more, for myself, a realistic visual of what we're sort of looking at as I'm planning ahead. Also, we're currently meeting, our schedule is alternating Tuesdays on the first and third week of the month, rotating between 3, 15, and 20 UTC. Hopefully that's working for everyone. If it's not, please let us know, or if you feel it would be helpful or more productive to meet more often. I know everyone's schedules are probably getting a little crazy, and so if this works well enough, then perhaps we just keep what we have for now. One thing I did add to this schedule of topics was a timeline for obtaining community feedback. I wasn't sure anyone had given much thought to this, but I want us to keep this in the back of our heads that, you know, do we have any questions that we'd like to pose to the community to get feedback? I think yesterday during our general call, maybe it was Aubrey had mentioned maybe getting one or two questions regarding topics from each of the sub-team working groups to include in a round two of questions to go to the community. So I don't know if we want to do that or if we want to take a look through all of our topics and come up with some ourselves. Definitely not wanting to hold up, you know, the process for the main working group. But one thought I had for this was, and we'll get to the next document in a minute, but I was thinking to the extent that we can, on your at your leisure, we have a Word document that we're going to be using for discussions of all of our topics, and I've had it put into Google Docs, and so perhaps it would be good for everyone at their leisure to just go through that document and give a once over to the topics and the questions that have already been posed during the final report, and see if anything pops to your head that would be good to get additional feedback. We can also discuss that during the calls that we have. So I don't know if anyone has a strong opinion or thought about it one way or the other, but something we just need to keep in mind as far as feedback from the community. So I'll stop right here and see if anyone has any thoughts or input at this time. Okay, I'm not seeing anyone. And then let's see, the next slide I put up here was just to give us sort of a cheat sheet of the topics that we're going to be looking at and reviewing. These are the questions that are posed to us as part of each of these topics that we'll be addressing, as well as some additional ones. And so I don't know if this helps give folks a helping sort of guide or not, but I wanted to have that there just for reference in case people had questions. Anyway, so it looks like it appears that we're good with the schedule we have right now. I'm not seeing a whole lot of feedback on the schedule and dates. Anyone? I'll stop here. Okay, well, we can always change it if things end up not working for folks. And so I will take it as good for right now. So the next document that we can pull up would be the Word document, I believe, Emily or Terry, if you want to put that up. Okay, I see Aubrey has made a comment about it being a good approximation as far as time. Is someone going to speak? Or is it just an open mic? Okay, so Aubrey was making a comment on the timeline. She said that she thought it was a good new approximation for the topics for us to work on. Hi, Paul. Welcome. Okay. So we now have this document that Krista and I put together as sort of a guide to help us in our discussions. And this is also, there's a link to this in the wiki, and it's in Google Docs, and I encourage everyone to go in and take a look. Like I said, if it inspires you to have maybe a few questions to bring to the community, that would be great, and please make note of it. Also, if there are additional pros and cons or questions that you would like to raise as we get on in our discussions with this, I encourage everyone to go in and take a look and make comments as needed. This is supposed to be something for all of us to work from and to keep our collected thoughts together. And so please feel free to go in and do that. I did change it a bit from last meeting. We had originally put in more of a background on this, and we were going to add a few policy sentences. And after looking it over and looking at the final report, I changed this a little bit to focus more on the rationale for the policy development, and took out some of the background for each of these topics. Everyone can, of course, go to the wiki and read the individual final report topics themselves if you need more background information. But I figured this would keep it a little more concise and focused for our conversations. Can we make this where folks can scroll? I can scroll. Perfect. So you can scroll down. You can see I added questions, observations, and deliberations. So that language was proposed by staff, meaning for the topics. And the questions below that are what we've been discussing already. So one thing I thought we could work on today would be nailing down the terminology regarding an accreditation program. So what are we talking about as a program for back-end providers? What are we looking to approve or certify them to do? Does anyone have thoughts, comments? Paul, thank you for comments on the document. I feel like I've been talking too much. So please, if anyone has some thoughts on what we are talking about as far as doing an accreditation or a certification of back-end provider, what are we really looking to do? Quiet bunch today. Paul, wonderful. Go ahead.
Thank you. Paul McGrady for the record. So I guess from the point of view of someone who helped applicants in the first round, the primary thing that I would like for this to do if we decide to move forward with it is to streamline, it's really from my point of view, to streamline the application process, to cut down the number of people that I can have to have look over an application, and therefore to drive costs for market entry out of the system, which in turn would hopefully increase the accessibility of the marketplace for more businesses and more different kinds of businesses and organizations, including businesses and organizations from perhaps jurisdictions where the application fee for the first round was just not an accessible dollar amount. Thanks.
Okay, great. Thank you, Paul. Jeff, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, and I'm trying to thanks. This is Jeff Newton. I'm trying to come up with the exact words, and I may look back at the applicant guidebook, but essentially in my mind, we would be certifying that the the RFP or whatever we want to call them, meets or exceeds the technical requirements of the application process. I think that's, you know, and they want to combine that with what eventually became the PDT, the post-delegation testing, or sorry, pre-delegation testing. Probably come up with better words, but I think that's essentially what we are doing, is that so applicants know that there are a group of entities that have been judged to have met or exceeded the technical requirements of the application process. Now, what those requirements are, we'll have to work out, but I mean, I think that's essentially what we're saying at this point.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jeff. Just looking through here. So, sorry, I have completely lost my train of thought. Jeff's hands back up again. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, just to respond, thanks. This is Jeff Newman, while you remember what you were going to say. Paul's question is this beneficial to back-end providers too, or just applicants? I think it's beneficial to back-end providers because they have certainty going in that they would meet ICANN's requirements. So if I'm a new back-end provider, let's say, I can go to ICANN presumably before the application process opens up, because I think that's what we're talking about as well. Presumably go to them, pass their testing, pass their requirements, and then be able to tell prospective applicants that they could be used by those applicants because they meet or exceed the requirements. I do think it benefits back-end providers.
Okay. Great, Jeff. And then based on that, I guess I should go to question number four on this topic that was raised before would be, should we differentiate between existing providers who've already been through this process and new providers? How would we want to treat that in an accreditation? Go ahead, Jeff.
Sorry, I had to unmute my microphone. This is Jeff Newman again. I think initially I would require all of the back-end providers to go through the testing. I wouldn't just necessarily for granted. I'm not saying we develop any criteria that exceeds what was in the last applicant's guidebook, but I think to be fair, I think each party should have to go through the testing once. So unfortunately, because we were just introducing the program, it would mean that the existing ones would have to go through the process. But presumably, it would be incredibly easy for the existing ones to demonstrate that they meet or exceed the requirements.
Yes, Aubrey, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, thank you. Just a question to follow up on Jeff. You said we'd have to go through it once. If we were putting together such a program, wouldn't we need to consider having it be a periodic recheck? So I guess I'm quibbling with those once. Thanks.
Yes, Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Aubrey. It's a good question. I think the answer to your question, Aubrey, is if this group determines that periodic checks are required, then yes, it would have to go through like every other one would have to go through the periodic checks. Although we could have a process, you know, the periodic check maybe just automatically satisfied by the fact that they're up and running with ELDs, that, you know, they're still producing the right files and everything else, kind of like a almost more of an audit situation as opposed to a another complete application redo process on the periodic checks. But again, I don't think there should be any difference of treatment for existing operators and new operators at this point. But that's, again, this is a personal view, so it's not, I don't mean that, you know, if other people disagree, please let me know.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. Yes, and does anyone have a differing position or additional comments? Kurt has his hand up. Go ahead, Kurt.
Hi. Yeah, I have a slightly different position. One is that the accreditation program can be different than the requirements that are just in the applicant guidebook, and that is that an accreditation program not only could demonstrate that the back-end provider or the registry service provider can operate the registry in accordance with the requirements to resolve domain name or technical services they have to provide. But it's also sort of a guarantee or a work towards resiliency and stability. So the criteria could include, you know, multiples of capacity so that they can resist DDoS effects or address the latest threat matrices. So the criteria would be, you know, the criteria would change over time as threats to stability and resiliency occur over time, or there'd be some sort of renewal process so that the registry could demonstrate that it's up to date.
Okay, great. Thank you, Kurt. And I see we have a line forming. We have Laura and then Jeff. So, Laura, please go ahead. If you're speaking, we don't hear you, Laura. Okay, I'm not hearing anything. Perhaps, Laura, we can have staff give you a phone in or call, dial out. While we're waiting, I'll go ahead and have Jeff respond.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. This is Jeff Newman. Although I really like what Kurt said, and I think that would be great to have some sort of, check on resiliency and stability and that they can handle the load, my fear of that would be that that may imply that ICANN's acting more as a guarantor as opposed to just kind of certifying that they met the minimum requirements. If there's a way that we can do what Kurt has said in a voluntary way or in a way that doesn't imply that ICANN's vouching or standing up for what the registry's capabilities are, then I think that's a great idea. My fear is that we're maybe asking ICANN to accept some form of liability if they continually are certifying that the registry meets the latest technologies and latest trends. Perhaps, you know, there could be an independent body that certifies that, or maybe it's just left to the market whereby a registry backend could say, yes, we know that such and such other RSP has met ICANN's requirements, but you know, look at this. We're ISO 2001 certified, and we're we do a SAS 70 Type 2 audit every year, or SSAE, or whatever it is. But I think it gets a little dangerous if we're asking ICANN to do that rather than having the market play that out. Thanks.
Laura? Great. Thank you, Jeff. And yes, I see Kurt provided the response there as well, saying correct, setting criteria has to be done very carefully. I should not have used the word guarantee. We are trying to prove resiliency, but not guarantee it. Great. I see Laura has added a comment because it appears her mic is not working. And so she was wanting to raise that there are some concerns with the term accredited, as it has other connotations, as Jeff has just mentioned. Perhaps there's another more neutral term that could be used. Jeff, I see your hand is up. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks again, Jeff Newman. I agree with Laura. I think accreditation has raised, that term accreditation has raised some issues on the mailing list that, and I know Donna's on here. She has expressed some concerns about WISE, and other people have as well, because it implies that you may have a legal agreement or something with ICANN, much like the registrars are accredited. So I agree with getting away, trying to move away from that term. I try to use, basically by saying the definition I did before, it's that ICANN is certifying that the registry has met or exceeded the requirements set forth in the application process. I don't know if certifying also has some connotations as well. And previously I used it as kind of a pre-approval process or approval process, but happy to listen to other people on this call to see if they have a better word for it, but I agree with Laura. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. So to that, and it kind of, at least to me, sounds like what we're talking about is something in between a certification and accreditation based off the sort of definition discussed previously. I think it was said that certification is often a program to test and evaluate the skills, and accreditation is usually a formal declaration by a third party that the vendor meets the standards. So it probably is more of a certification, I guess, than an accreditation. But I guess my question is then, what would be the exact criteria that we would want? I know that Kurt had mentioned some items before regarding multiples of capacity, being able to resist threats that are to security and stability. Perhaps we want to come up with a list of what we think is most important for a certification or accreditation, and then figure out who would be performing those. Like you said, I don't know that we necessarily want ICANN to do it, but so I'm having a question and a brain fart at the same time. Just looking for a little clarification there, I guess. I see Jeff's hand up again. Go ahead, Jeff, and apologies for my stumbling through this section here.
Well, that's okay, Sarah. This is Jeff Newman, transcript. I'm not sure we need to solve what the criteria are at this point. I think one of the options that we have is just to come out with the policy recommendation that it meets or exceeds the requirements, and then either kick it out to an implementation group or even get some input from WorkTrack 4, because they're looking at the technical requirements as one of the as one of their work items. So they are looking at the applicant guidebook, the technical criteria. They will look at pre-delegation testing. In theory, they will have or could have some recommendations regarding the criteria. I think if we just get to the point of agreeing within this group that they meet or exceed whatever the requirements are that are set, I think we've done our job from WorkTrack 1. we could also then work on setting up the recommendation of whether we think it can be ICANN or a third party. We can talk about things of how the process would work to apply for that pre-approval. We could talk, you know, about the process and procedures, but I'm not sure we need to agree upon the criteria. And as Donna says in the chat, there may be more than one solution, or there may be different ways to become accredited or certified. But Donna also says in the chat, I just want to make sure it's covered, that she doesn't have audio, and we also want to understand the problems we are trying to solve before we start talking about the solution. So Donna still wants to have more discussions on that. Thanks.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jeff. That does make life a lot easier. I appreciate that input. I'm still learning this whole process, so forgive me for getting ahead of myself. Aubrey, I see your hand is up. Go ahead.
Yes. First, I'd like to say do not worry about stumbling and getting ahead of yourself, because we are just feeling our way along the whole subject. But in terms of what Jeff said, it seems very good to rely on the criteria. But there was something in what Kurt was alluding to that we may want to look at is the criteria are very much in a certification like a pre-testing, so that we're solving the problem of everybody having to go through the retesting again for each and every application. That does seem to be the basic problem that's being solved here. But there may also, not going so far as the stability and security of the Internet, but there may be some criteria that we would want to add from this level in terms of the capability to support multiple applicants. And I don't know how indeed that's measurable or how, and that would in implementation. But that might be a criteria that people would want to add beyond that and sort of, you know, are they a group that can just handle one, or are indeed they are a shop that can handle multiple, and there may be issues there that are worth pre-testing. And that was my only thought on that. Thanks.
Okay, great. Thank you, Aubrey. And I see Jeff has his hand up again. Jeff, please go ahead.
Yes, thanks, Sarah. Jeff Newman again for the transcript. I believe to cover Aubrey's point, you know, it would not be unheard of to ask questions on scalability and on capacity. And in fact, I think that they did ask some questions on that in the guidebook, and there may be ways to test that as well. You can't really test, you know, having 300 registries with 10 registrations in it, because you don't know the number of queries or DNS queries or other types of transactions that are going to take place. But you can get an idea from how a party answers a written question on scalability and the systems that they have, whereby independent parties could make some sort of assessment, at least for an approval process. But it is ultimately very difficult to test. But I do think an independent party could make some educated assumptions, well, better than assumptions, educated predictions on whether a registry could handle that kind of scale.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. And I see that there are multiple people typing in the chat. Cheryl, you made a note, and I was reading through it, and I am unsure regarding your question to me and AI is. I'm quite sure what that is. So if you could.
Oh, sorry, Sarah, Cheryl, for the record. That's my shorthand for action item. My apologies. Not artificial intelligence. At this hour of the morning, I'm lacking any intelligence. But
okay, great. Thank you. And so what Cheryl had wrote in the chat was, Jeff, I know that the referral to World Track 4 here, but would appreciate a short articulation of the issues as identified by this working track, perhaps framed as a simple question, for us to work track for to us in our WP, and ensure we effectively deal with it. Perhaps an an action item, Sarah. So, Jeff, I see your hands up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff Newman again. I think once we, Cheryl, I don't think WorkTrack 4 should look at this yet. I was just saying that once we finalize our recommendations, and if indeed this were a final recommendation out of this WorkTrack, I think we would go back to the full working group to make sure it's something that the full working group agrees with that recommendation. And then at that point in time, it would be referred to work track 4, and yes, we would include things of background and specific questions and the other things that you would need as the as one of the co-chairs of work track 4. I was simply making the point that work track 4 is working already on a review of the technical criteria and whether there are recommendations. So to me, it would make sense that if we did finalize it, this as a policy recommendation, then it could be referred to at that point to WorkTrack 4. Thanks. And thanks for the reminder.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. And we have a question from Yasmin in the chat. She said, apologize for joining the group late. Has the group made a distinction between one and an RSP demonstrating its ability to manage the criterial registry functions, parentheses, effectively what the application process was, and parentheses, or two, the RSP's ability to actually manage the critical registry functions, parentheses, what pre-delegation testing was, and parentheses. Is the scope of this group limited to point one, or does it extend to point two? That is a very good question, and I unfortunately do not have the answer to that. Perhaps Jeff or Avery. Jeff, you're going to save me. Thank you so much. Go ahead, Jeff.
Sure, Sarah. Yasmin, I would say that it's really, at this point, the only recommendation that we've agreed upon is really number one in your comments. I think if we got to, I think number two would be more of what I'd agree about, which is ICANN certifying that a registry is actually able to do what it said it would do, which could in theory, bring some liability, or liability on ICANN. Although I do think that number one could include the pre-delegation testing, because I don't think pre-delegation testing actually showed that the registry is able to manage the critical registry functions. I think it was really kind of a preliminary check to see whether certain files could be exchanged, for example, with the escrow provider, or whether the WHOIS output met the requirements in the registry agreement. I don't think pre-delegation testing actually demonstrated the registry's ability to actually manage the critical registry function. So I guess my answer, sorry, is a long way of saying it's more like number one. However, we could, if we agreed, have the pre-delegation testing as part of that, but I wouldn't necessarily want to go much further than that.
Great, thank you. Jeff. And Paul, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Paul McGrady here. Is there a lesson to be learned from academia in this, that in terms of whether or not accreditation by a third party results in liability to that third party in the event that it turns out that the accredited party isn't as up to snuff as the accreditation body thinks they are at the time of accreditation? Because I understand what Jeff's point is, that you know, we don't necessarily want to open up another realm of liability for ICANN, but it seems like there's lots of other bodies out there, both I guess in academia and in healthcare and other places, that are accrediting authorities that don't necessarily in the line of liability. And I wonder if we could dig around in some of those spaces. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Paul. Yes, that's a good question, and I'm not sure where we're going to get that answer, as I am new to this, and Jeff's hand's up. Bless you, sir, for raising your hand. I don't know if that's something that we have staff look into or how that works. Go ahead.
Thanks, Jeff Newman again. Paul, it's a great question. I kind of think of this as, or the first thing that comes to my mind is like as an auditor, where an auditor will certify that you're able to do what you said you could do, but not that what you said you could do meets some sort of standard. Auditors are very quick to disclaim that you're in compliance with certain laws and regulations. It really just audits and says you said you could do this, and you know, you've shown us that you could do that, but we're not saying that what you could do meets any requirements or not. I think they do it for the same reason, for legal liability reasons as well. But if someone wants to do that research, that's fine. I just know that this has been a critical concern that ICANN has had over the years as to not wanting to do more during an evaluation program of new TLDs, going back to, you know, the 2000 round. But if they'd want to step up to more, that's we can work on that.
Great, thank you, Jeff. And Laura, I've seen your hand go up a couple of times. Is there something that you would like to say? Is your audio working? I see you just sent me a message, so I will read what she has said in the chat. When we refer to the process of accreditation, are we inventing a new process for future rounds, or was this something that took place as part of pre-delegation testing last time, and the discussion is just about moving it to earlier in the process in the future? I was not around the first part. I have personally been under the impression that we're looking to invent a new process, or at least streamline how things sort of happened during the last round. If someone wants to provide a little more color or clarification, that would be great. See a few people typing in the chat. Jeff, hi there. Go ahead.
I prefer to type my answers, but no one's speaking. I think that question gets to kind of the heart of the criteria. I certainly think it is possible that you know, one of the reasons we talked about having this was so that you would only have to go through processes once, as opposed to having to go through the exact same process hundreds of times in some cases, and maybe even next time thousands of times. So, you know, my personal opinion would be that it would be great to move the application process and pre-delegation testing process to being at the same point, in other words, to be required for approval. But I don't think, again, we're setting the criteria right now. I think we are just coming up with the policy of there should be a process by which a registry services provider could be or voluntarily could be approved as a registry services provider because it meets or exceeds the technical requirements of the application process. If we come up and agree on that, then we can work on the criteria as kind of the next phase, either work track 4 or an implementation team or whatever. But I think we need to all agree on the policy.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. And I see that we have one more comment in the chat that was from Donna Austin. She asked, as the entity responsible for security and stability of the Internet, isn't ICANN going to be liable if a registry fails or compromises SSR in some way? And I think we touched on that a little bit earlier, that was a concern that was before you joined the call, Donna. I think there has been some concern expressed having ICANN2 directly involved in the certification or accreditation process. And Jeff has responded to Donna saying, I don't believe that with the certification process carefully designed, no. Anyway, so going on, I think one thing we have not discussed yet that is on this list is the question of cost and or funding. So do people have thoughts on how this program would be funded? Are we going to be looking to ICANN to fund it? Are we looking for a provider to fund it? Also, how would it be renewed? I personally don't have any comments for this. If anyone in the crowd has any thoughts, if this is something we can circle back on, you can think on it. I note that we are 9 minutes out from the top of the hour, so we are needing to sort of draw this to a close, so maybe cost is a good place to draw a line under this if no one else has a thought or input at this time. I see a comment from Donna, and she says, Sarah, this assumes one solution, and I'm not sure this is a question that we need to get at this point. Okay, great. Go ahead, Jeff.
Thanks. This is Jeff Newman. I put it in the chat, but I believe it if this is a program that we agree on, it should be cost recovery and funded. It's a voluntary program, or at least the way that I've proposed it, it would be a voluntary program. It's not required to get this pre-approval, that you could always go through the process at the time of an application, but I think it should be cost recovery by the RFPs that get the benefit of saying that they're certified and only having to do this once. I note Avery's comment that says it's dangerous since that leaves so many costs up to institutions. My response to that would be we can do a better job at designing the program so that the costs are not left up to intangible items that are unknown.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. And Aubrey, I see your hand is up. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. This is Aubrey. In terms of cost recovery, we said that last time and therefore had things like all the policy work done on this for the previous years were figured into the calculation of costs. So if we're going to say something like cost recovery, and I believe that, you know, cost recovery of the process itself is indeed a reasonable thing, but I think we have to be careful in how we say it, which goes along with what Jeff was responding, that, you know, we have to define what costs are included in cost recovery and that it can't go beyond those that are absolutely necessary for administering the program itself. Thanks.
Okay, great. Thank you, Aubrey. So I think we are at a good stopping point on this discussion today. If no one else has any comments they would like to bring up. And so I will ask if we have any other business that anyone would like to discuss or address. We still do have, what, 6-5 minutes left to this, so we've got some time for additional discussion. I see Jeff's hand up. Jeff, go ahead.
Thanks, Sarah. Wow, that's not coming from me, is it? That is not my music. Is other people hearing music? That's pretty cool, though. I guess my comment would be that, Donna has made some comments in chat about this is one solution. We're not there yet. At another point, she said that we are still trying to come up with a solution without a problem. I guess I would ask that it would be helpful for Donna to, if she could, enumerate more on that. And, you know, I want to make sure that if we come up with a proposal that we're all pretty much behind it and have addressed any of the issues. So, if we go through this, Donna, I know you weren't able to speak on this call, but if you could, in writing, give us some of your objections or just some of the, just elaborate more on your comments, because I don't think it was, I don't think we gave it enough attention during this call. And so if you could just send something to the list, that would be great. Otherwise, it seems like we're headed towards some preliminary recommendations. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. And Donna, apologies if I missed some of your comments. Trying to speak and read is more challenging than it probably should be. And so if I've missed some of your comments for this discussion, I do apologize. I noted at the beginning this document that we've been looking at here is available on the wiki. There is a Google Docs link to it, and so I encourage everyone to please go in and make comments. Donna, if you'd either prefer to make your comments on this document or on the list, that is very welcomed. And we've got some people chatting. Let me see. Okay, Donna is currently on vacation, so she will be making some comments. And Aubrey is making a comment that let's not wait to the next call to do more work on this. So, yes, so please, everyone, if you could go into the document and Google Docs, comments, questions, concerns, airing of any grievances that you have, please. And I don't see anyone else's hand up, and we've had no other business raised, and so there's still people typing in the chat.
Hi, sir. This is Steve. I have my hand up, actually.
Oh, sorry there. Go ahead.
Sorry, I'm above the line, so maybe you can see it. This is Steve Chan from staff, and I just wanted to maybe touch on what Donna is mentioning. So it seems like, as she says, we're sort of jumping to solutions, and it seems like we might have or possibly skipped a step in that, you know, you define the problem and then you establish requirements. I'm not so sure that we've done a real good job in identifying and documenting what the requirements are for this program, as, you know, that really could change the parameters of the actual program or whatever it ends up being. So just to sort of echo Donna's comment and maybe that's in line with what she's thinking, that's a suggestion from staff possibly. Thanks.
Okay, great. Duly noted.
This is Jeff.
Oh, sure, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Jeff Newman. I also want to just state for the record that, you know, we have had a number of conversations on this, pros and the cons and the problems. Both when we were talking about the overarching issues way back when, even prior to Helsinki. And then there are some pros and cons documented in this document. Kurt also put out a paper with some pros and cons in it, and then he now has posted some things in the comments. I actually think we have spent a lot of time talking about the reasons for this. But if we want to flush it out further, I'm fine with doing that, and I will certainly add on to whatever Kurt just put on. And if we could go back to our notes from the original meetings that we were talking about this, that would be great. Thanks.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jeff, and we will be sure to do that. I see people still typing in the chat, but we are at the top of the hour. And I know you probably have other meetings that you need to get to, so I'm just looking to see if it's safe to end this call. I think it is. All right, let's go ahead and end the recording. Thank you, everyone, for your time and your participation. I really do appreciate it, and we will be speaking again in 2 weeks. And please go into the Google Docs and make your comments and edits.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thanks, Sarah.
And once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.